Blog Talk Radio.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome to Reflecting His Gifts. I'm Sissy Ellison, your host, and I believe that everyone has a God-given purpose, a gift or a talent, a testimony of grace that is meant to impact this world for the good and bring glory and honor to God. I also believe, as Romans 8:28 tells us, that all things, even the bad stuff, work together for the good of those who've been called according to God's purpose. God is famous for making lemonade out of lemons and giving hope to the hopeless, using the foolish to confound the wise, and even using our worst pain and losses and trials to make us stronger, to teach us important lessons, and then to use us as beacons of light as we comfort others who may encounter the same trials. I receive many inquiries from gifted people who would like to be on my show, and I always look for unusual and uplifting stories. Tonight's guest got my attention right away, because not only is he a person who uses his God-given creativity wonderfully, part of his testimony is that for most of his life, he's been an insomniac. From childhood, Kevin M. Kraft rarely ever got a good night's sleep, and this malady continued on into his adult years. However, Kevin made lemonades out of lemons, using those sleepless hours to write, and his writings and creative works have gained national and even international attention and acclaim. God truly used all things for good as he gave Kevin a creative outlet during those sleepless nights. Kevin is a man of faith and a very talented man who reflects God's gifts. It's my pleasure to welcome Kevin M. Kraft to the program tonight. Hi, Kevin.
Greetings, Sissy. It's a pleasure to get to talk to you tonight. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're so welcome. I can't wait to hear your story. You have a very interesting and inspiring life story to share with us tonight. All of our stories begin with our birth and our childhood, of course, and I believe our God-given purpose and our gifts and talents can even be somewhat revealed then. We'd love to hear about your early beginnings. Could you tell us about the young Kevin Kraft?
I was born in Urbana, New York, in the western part of the Empire State. At a very young age, just over a year old, I believe, my twin brother and I were subsequently adopted into the Kraft family, once I get my name, a family then of six. With my brother, we became a family of eight, of course, which was considered, you know, it was big, but it wasn't unusual back then. Today, of course, we'd have our own reality show, you know, a family of eight. it's kind of considered freakish now, you know, but we were a family of eight, and we loved each other dearly. My dad was a microbiologist. My mom was a nurse, and we lived on the outskirts of a tiny town called Bath, just a stone's throw away from Urbana.
Mm-hmm. Well, that city, Bath, sounds like a little English town. I don't think I've ever heard of it. What's the town of Bath, New York, like, and did you enjoy growing up there?
Yeah, in fact, Bath was named after a town in England where, when it was settled in the 1700s. It's a tiny town. You'll be lucky to find it on the map. It's so small. It's nestled among the majestic tree-covered hills and valleys. It was quite idyllic in many ways, as well as isolated. Large dairy producer, so lots of cattle farms. I always refer to it as the land that time forgot, with apologies to Edgar Rice Burroughs. It never changed much and hasn't, as I discovered when I returned for a visit last year. It's a great place to grow up, though, to run around, lots of country to explore, roads that you don't know where they go, so you follow them to see where they go, and you find yourself in a town that you don't recognize, but, you know, but it's like a Shangri-La in a lot of ways. Lots of places
to explore.
Isn't that
wonderful? That sounds wonderful to me. What did you like to do when you were a child, Kevin? You are a writer now, and did you like to create then? Were you interested in writing? You shared that at an early age you loved to write stories, but what do you think inspired you to do that, and did your parents read to you a lot when you were a child, and do you think it's important for parents to read to their children?
Indeed, yeah. I always appreciated great storytellers and great stories. My dad read to us a lot before bed, Bible stories usually, when I was really young. my siblings read to me as well. My earliest teachers, of course, continued this. And I love good stories. Mother Goose, Grimm fairy tales, myths and legends. Story time was always my favorite time of the day. But television and motion pictures influenced me just as much. I was always a visually oriented person by nature, so I watched lots of television. Movies weren't quite as accessible for me back then as they are now, at least not early on. But we got to the drive-in theater once in a while. Bath had a drive-in theater, as well as an interior theater where we watched films. Science fiction was and still is my favorite genre. So, of course, we watched Star Trek and The Wild Wild West and The Time Tunnel and later Star Wars, which needs to be experienced on the big screen to be fully appreciated, I think. But teachers would sometimes read to us classic stories, like, for instance, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory one that was read to us. And then they would show us the film adaptation, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And this built a real connection with me between fiction writing and filmmaking at a young age, which I employ today. So.
Well, you know, I always ask these questions because truly I believe you are kind of, God puts those little gifts and talents in us when we are created. And I think, you know, the things that stimulate those can bring those to the surface. My mom read to me most every night of my life when I was a child, and I write. I'm a musician and a composer and a writer as well, and she always read Grimm's and Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales, Mother Goose nursery rhymes, and the classic children's literature such as Huckleberry Finn and Treasure Island. And I can still remember those books and the wonderful pictures in those big old books. And as she read, I would stare at the pictures and imagine all the characters and the events. And don't you think many children gain much creative ability and grand imaginations from being read to from wonderful books like that?
Absolutely, yeah. It cultivates literary appreciation and creativity during the most formative years. And they learn the rudimentary elements of story making. So I think it's invaluable that happens.
Do you think I was going to say, do you think some of that is being lost in this world of technology? Do kids read as much as they used to? I really don't know.
I was going to say, I know my kids do, but generally speaking, I think parents reading to your kids, I think, still occurs. I think it occurs at a younger age and for a briefer time, from what I'm able to see. I think that kids much earlier kind of take off on their own and get into their own things, be it video games or whatever. I don't think there is that importance put on telling stories to children. Matter of fact, whenever I'm in a doctor's waiting room or something like that, and there's a little kid and their parent, the parent just hands the kid their cell phone or their iPad or something, you know, and the kid plays a game on that, you know. So I think that these days that's kind of lost, and I feel sorry for kids in that way because I work with children, I work with teenagers and everything at my job, and I'm surprised at how much they seem to lack imagination, you know, that they copy things, you know, that they may see or see from each other or something like that. But as far as really being creative, it's very very rare to find a child that has really good creative talent. It isn't just copying something that they've seen. That saddens me.
I think you're right, and I think a lot of that is lost in the world nowadays because I'm of the mind that you have to really experience something to be able to write passionately about it. And the artists, the musicians, and the writers of old used to spend a lot of time with nature and looking at seascapes and beautiful landscapes and my goodness. And they experience that. And I think now, you know, people just stare at a computer, and that lacks some of the emotional stimulation that is needed to write those great works. Do you agree?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, that's what fueled my imagination as much as anything. It's just, you know, wandering around the hills, you know, and you know, getting, you know, looking at nature and you know, looking at how things were created, and, you know, looking up into the sky and into the stars as well as to the earth and everything there, and just and it just fuels the imagination, you know. And kids just they just don't do that today. I mean, what I can see, you know, that they look at, like you said, they're looking at their computers, their monitors, their screens, and it's just become a very soulless.
I don't think there's a way to turn back either, do you? I think it's become so advanced, there's just no way back to the to the past.
It's pretty much normal,
yeah.
It's been normalized not to do, you know. So then, and that saddens me further, you know. That I'm glad that my kids aren't like that, but they're very much into. I mean, you know, I've been able to pass on a lot of my values, my wife too, you know, of just, you know, looking at life and being amazed by creation itself. And as well as reading, you know, reading good stories and everything. And my eldest daughter is a writer herself. So that's
really?
To chip off the old block.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, they learn by example, and they will accept what they're taught and what we share with them too. So, well, Kevin, as happy and creative as you were also suffering with an ailment that we don't often think of children having. I've never thought of it until I read your story, and that is insomnia. I don't think I've ever heard of a child having insomnia. Maybe a sleepless night here and there, but not just actual insomnia. When did this begin, and what was this like for you?
Well, I can remember my earliest memories, solid memories, begin at 4 years old. I can remember bits and pieces and flashes from earlier years, but 4 is when my most solid memories begin. And even then, I remember having difficulty sleeping, certainly sleeping an entire night. Occasionally, I would complain to my parents about it, but they, like I, figured it was simply my overactive imagination, and they would tell me to go to sleep. As time went on, I blamed it on my twin brother. We often shared a room together, and when we didn't do that, we shared a wall between rooms. And he snored horribly, loudly. It certainly didn't help.
Oh, no. Maybe that was the reason.
It didn't help. But it became apparent that my insomnia was due to something else entirely.
Wow.
It was very difficult for me to be awake when everyone was dead to the world most of the time. It contributed to me being a rather moody and unpredictable child, as you might imagine. You know,
it was
difficult.
Wow. Well, is this a common occurrence or a common ailment among children, or is this kind of a rare thing?
From my research, and of course, I began researching this, you know, about 10 years ago. It's not uncommon, really.
Mm-hmm.
Childhood onset insomnia isn't uncommon as you might think it is. It's just that nobody really calls it that, or they don't recognize it as a significant physical problem. Like my parents, you know, they said it's calm down, go to sleep. And then the parents kind of leave it at that without looking into something, you know, further, something deeper. But it is. I think it is quite common. I think it's even more common today, perhaps. In my experience at work, again, as I encounter kids, you know, and they can't sleep. They have trouble sleeping at home, and it could be from a variety of reasons. Not always from the same reason. It could be just stress in their home environment or at school that's keeping them awake. It could be digestive. There could be their diet alone. Maybe they're eating something that's keeping them awake. You know, that all these things can have an impact on the kind of sleep one gets at night. So.
Right. Well, how did this affect your schoolwork and your daily activities? I cannot imagine that you would have the energy or the focus without sleep to even play or study. I have to sleep or I can't function. I can't imagine what it was like to have an ongoing problem with insomnia. How did you function?
Well, the energy was sporadic. School was especially difficult in that I often struggled to stay awake during the day, during the more relaxed times, like when we were lectured to or they were teaching a lesson.
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't pay attention, I'd keep nodding off. I couldn't retain information because my short-term memory was, short. And if not that, I nodded off during class. I was barely able to I was barely an average student because of this. I had to come up with creative ways to recall information for tests, and it somehow got me through it. But it was tough. Playtime was easier because I was a child, so playing was just natural. You know, you had that energy anyway. But as much as I exhausted myself during the day, the nights remained often quite sleepless. It was very difficult, very, very
That's
difficult.
That's kind of sad to me. I can't imagine a little child lying awake and, you know, having to suffer like that. But what did you do to soothe yourself or to just keep going?
I kept going, writing during the day, writing, reading, researching health. I had an insatiable curiosity about everything, so that kept my brain active at least. And I love music as well. I wasn't saved until I was 16, but I always believed and respected God and wondered nonstop about Him. I'm sure He preserved me through those early days and those that came afterwards as well. But I just kept going. I didn't have any other choice. You know, I just had to keep going as best I could. And just push through.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you believed in God, and many people believe in God, but you and I both know as Christians, believing in God and knowing God through His Son, Jesus Christ, are two different things. When did you actually commit your life to Jesus Christ, and how did that change your life?
That occurred when I was about 15, just between 15 and 16, I think. And as I said, I always believed it and respected Him, but it took a while to see that I needed more than that. My life was empty, and I was pretty much living by my wits, you know, by what I knew and just, you know, making things up as I went along. And I had to come to the end of myself to finally commit myself to the service of Jesus Christ, and that made all the difference. It conveyed to me that God actually, you know, could enable me to deal with this problem somehow. Even though I thought it was unfair that I had the problem in the first place, once I was saved, I found strength in Jesus Christ and the power that He gives, you know, for us to endure such things. I knew like you, Romans 8:28, you know, all things work together for good that love Him and are called according to His purpose. And so I clung to verses like that, realizing that there had to be a purpose in all this. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know where it would lead me, but that was what kept me going, was that I knew that God allowed this in my life for a reason. As cruel and as awful as it seems, it's for a reason. And so I just lived in that truth.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful truth to be able to hold on to, because it makes sense out of things that we can't make sense out of. I kind of call it insurance. We have the insurance that God gives us, and that insurance promises that although we will go through these things, because He said you will have trials, tribulation, and sorrow. You will have that. But be of good cheer, because I've overcome all these things, and it's me who will strengthen you, and I'll make this good. I'll make good out of this somehow. There's so many promises, and when you can rely on those instead of just thinking it's futile and it's going to kill me and it's hopeless, my goodness, it's a no-brainer for me. I'd rather go through those bad things with God than without
Amen.
Him.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah. Well, it seems so incredibly unfair to me that you just kept on having this problem and that you hardly ever slept at all, but that's what happened. And when you did drift off, you were afflicted by nightmares. What was that like for you?
It was like my brain had a lot of information to process, and it couldn't do it, you know, on the normal circumstances when I slept, when most people do that kind of thing. So when I could actually drop off those times that I did, it made up for lost time. And it produced, it's hard to even describe. The dreams were, some of them were just terrifying and reoccurring, you know. I was always running from something, trying to escape something, trying to get to something. Encountering something horrible, and so even when I was sleeping, I couldn't rest. And of course, sometimes the films and stuff that I watched probably, you know, played a tiny role in providing material for these things and was added to the mix. But most were just of a general nature, but just distorted and mixed up, as if all my thoughts and information were absorbed, that were processed in a blender. But lest anyone think that this made things better and kind of even things out, whatever dreams I experienced at night were outnumbered by the hallucinations I experienced during the day. I would see things in the middle of the day that ended up being merely hallucinations, and they usually weren't very frightening in and of themselves. Just the fact that I was seeing these things that I discovered weren't there in the end, you know, that they weren't real in the end, was frightening enough. And it would happen at any time. Even when I got older, it would happen when I was driving. Yes, mm-hmm. I actually drove under these conditions.
Wow, you are something else, Kevin. You know what, I've kind of thought about this and why you had those nightmares, and I would think that because of the massive amount of sleep deprivation you were going mm-hmm. through, because sleep deprivation can cause terrible, horrible problems, this brought on the nightmares, because normal REM sleep is when we process the circumstances, events, and even fears of our life. It's essential that we reach that level of sleep so that process can occur. Do you think that since you hardly ever reached the REM level of sleep, once you kind of did, that process in your mind was bombarded and overloaded with all your stored up thoughts, fears, and events, and it erupted into those horrible nightmares?
Yes, I think that was it. I think, it's like the brain was making up for lost time. It's like, we got to process this stuff. And it created a whole nightmare world for me. It was incredible.
I still remember
the dreams I had. I still remember them vividly because they were just so incredible and frightening mm-hmm. and disturbing. You know, it was maddening. It really was.
That is so sad. And you know what? There might be some little children going through that right now. And I wonder if they can even describe it or voice it to anyone. What if they're living in fear, laying there night after night like that, or going through the day with those mm-hmm. hallucinations? That's a sad thing to think of, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah. Well, you describe your ongoing enjoyment of writing. It's almost as if God gave you that comforting outlet to compensate for your insomnia. Did you see it that way, or do you see it that way now?
I would say that it gave me an emotional and creative outlet, especially into adulthood, and especially after I moved out of the house. See, as children, we had trouble settling down anyway with the settings done. With an early bedtime to boot, we understood that once we were in bed, we were to stay there. You know, to get up would be to invite annihilation at that
time. Oh,
we wanted to live, so we stayed in bed until it was time to get up, or we had to go to the bathroom. I exaggerate a little bit, but we lived under. We went to bed and we stayed there. You didn't get up. Therefore, when I was a kid, I couldn't get up and roam the house or watch TV or read or write. I just lay there all night wishing that I could.
Right.
And, there may have been a couple times where I decided to live dangerously and actually crept out of my room just to see what the house was like after hours, but that was crazy. And I didn't do that much. But, you know, most of the time I just laid there. I just laid there, and I just couldn't sleep.
Goodness, all I can think of is that taught you to have a lot of self-control
patience
or something good was happening in you through just having to lay there like that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there was that.
Oh, Kevin. Well, did you go on to college, and how on earth did you study and excel with little or no rest? I think you mentioned you helped other students with their writing. My goodness.
Mm-hmm. I did try to go to college just before I was married, and then for a little while afterwards, I attempted to get my degree in human services. I eventually had to give it up with most everything else because of the insomnia became so debilitating that I just couldn't do it. In my English comp classes, our instructor would ask me to help other students with their papers, and other students would ask me, you know, with their papers and compositions. And I remember she told me the best compliment I ever received. She said, she told the class that I was one of the best writers she'd ever met off the streets.
Wow.
And that remains one of my most cherished compliments. But, I had to give up, college because I just couldn't function really except to write, you know, but it became more difficult to study and to retain information than I needed to, to pass my classes.
Sure.
And although I did pretty well, was on the honor roll and everything there, but it just became so impossible to do it. It was just like I had a family to manage, and mm-hmm. so I just thought something has to give. So I just gave up
yeah.
the college thing and did what I could.
Well, you married when you were 28. What was married life like for you?
Well, I don't want to give anybody the idea that marriage was hell on earth or was always bad or anything like that. So know that right off. I mm-hmm. married the most wonderful woman in the world, bar none, and we had a joyous marriage. But Sharon, while she could not understand what I was going through, was understanding and always supported me. I think mm-hmm. The most difficult times for her was when the insomnia was at its worst and I could only sit around most of the time, this shell of a man, you know, like a black hole or a scarecrow, you know, more than a man. Having mm-hmm. said that, there was a lot of joy. The dark times, thankfully, are overshadowed by the joyous times, thanks to God. Mm-hmm. But insomnia did impact our life. Never in a good way, except, you know, in the Romans 8:28 sense.
yeah.
So it was difficult. It was difficult.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, we're going to pause for just a few moments for a word from our sponsor to hear about the exciting What's In series by author Alexandra Clare. Stay tuned and we'll be right back to continue our talk with Kevin M. Kraft.
The What's In series by Alexandra Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Shield as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Woods. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexandra Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexandraclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.
Welcome back to Reflecting His Gifts. We're talking tonight with a screenplay writer, author, filmmaker, musician. My goodness, he does everything. Kevin M. Kraft. He also had an ongoing, lifelong bout with insomnia from childhood, so he's been telling us about that. Kevin, how did you earn a living and support your family? Did you work? What kind of work did you do or do you do?
Well, despite my failed efforts at getting my degree in college, I did go on and still do work in human services. I began working with the developmentally disabled and physically disabled just before Sharon and I were married. And then from there, I went on to work with the mentally ill in a psychiatric hospital setting. And now, as a client access representative today, my clientele are children, whom I've learned I have a real knack for relating to. I have an affinity for children, and they with me. So that's what I do.
That's a wonderful thing, and it's just another example of, you know, God using our own suffering sometimes to give us great compassion for others. And I think as a child, if you had suffered, then you would identify and feel compassion for children who suffer too. So that's a wonderful way that God uses our pain, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, I understand that your insomnia worsened. Tell us what that was like for you as a father and a husband. What was it like for you? How did it affect your family and your life? And did you seek medical or psychological attention or care for this? And what happened, you know, with all of this?
Well, you and your listeners probably know what it's like not to sleep maybe to sleep 4 hours instead of eight or 6 hours instead of eight, or maybe even for a night or two, not to sleep at all,
mm-hmm.
and how that wreaks havoc on your life, you know, very easily. Now, imagine that, you know, multiplied by 1,000, and you might get an idea of what I went through.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And again, you know, my family was a joy to me, but it was tough. And
yes.
by this time that we started a family, I would go through long stretches without sleep. 10
uh-huh.
days was my longest stretch. Just imagine that. My lament was that I couldn't enjoy parenthood as much as I wanted to with the first two kids. I was just so stressed out. It was so bad that my eldest daughter, when she was an infant, I would give her bottle and sit down with her, and she could sense my distress. It just must have rolled off me or something, because I'd be feeding her, and I'd look down at her as she fed, and I see all of a sudden she's just big tears start welling up in her eyes, and I'd be like, what's wrong?
No.
And she'd just bawl, you know, and that would happen regularly. It's like, well, what's wrong with her? Well, she knew I wasn't at peace. She could sense my turmoil, you know.
Yeah.
Well, by the time my eldest son came along, I couldn't work. I had to stop working. And then I collected disability because I couldn't sleep. So my wife had to go to work, and I ended up being Mr. Mom. I watched the kids during the day while she worked.
Mm-hmm.
I managed, but it was difficult, and I'm sure it wasn't always fun for the kids. Again, you talked about self-control. It was an exercise, a daily exercise in self-control, you know, because, you know, children are little bundles of emotion, and they don't always, they can't always tell you what's wrong effectively except to cry. And then on top of that they knew that I wasn't at peace, you know, they knew that I was, you know, a mess, and so that would add to the problems. So it was difficult. And again, I don't want you to give the impression that it was awful all the time. It wasn't by any means, but it was difficult. It was hard, you know, to manage those times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I have to tell you a story. Then this illustrates my condition. I was at work one day before I stopped working. I was at work, and it was the end of the day. I was filling my paperwork. Went into the classroom. Came one of my coworkers. There's a sweet young lady named Tamara. She greeted me cheerfully and hopped up on one of the empty student desks in front of me, and I was a bit surprised. It seemed unlike her. It seemed rather bold of her, actually, because, you know, we were both married, so I thought, why is she coming in talking with me, and I'm the only one in here? But the door was open, and anyone passing by could see us, so I thought, okay, well, all right. But I certainly had no designs on her. But it was odd. We began to talk, small talk, and I got the impression she was working her way up to telling me something important. And as we engaged in talk, I glanced out my door to see a couple of my other coworkers passing by, and they kind of, you know, looked in and kind of stared like, what's going on between these two?
Yeah.
But then something occurred to me, though, and I'm not sure how, but I turned to Tamara and asked, you aren't really here, are you? And she shook her head and vanished before my eyes. She was never there. I've been talking to a hallucination for 4 minutes.
You are kidding me, Ken.
No, I guess that's the truth. That's the truth.
Oh, goodness. That is
so
the sleep deprivation. That can really cause a lot of mental illness. And depression is another offspring of insomnia,
definitely.
Hallucinations, irritability,
mm-hmm.
eating
mm-hmm.
disorders. What about your appetite? Did you have a good appetite?
I
don't know how you did.
Because I knew I had to. Yeah, I ate because I knew I had to, but yeah, it definitely suppressed my appetite, and I just ate because I knew I had to survive, and I did it, you know. So thank God I didn't become malnutrition. Although, keep that in your thoughts as I talk about something later.
yeah. Well, I understand this all came to a critical point in your life, and you were just completely exhausted emotionally and physically. What happened to change things for you? What happened at this point in time?
Well, I had gone through a legion of physicians and psychologists and psychiatrists and neurologists and sleep specialists and even quacks. And they all tried all kinds of therapy and medication. I did several sleep studies, which were no help whatsoever. In fact, their tests indicated that I was sleeping even though I was clearly awake, if you can believe that. It's just like I existed in the twilight world between sleep and consciousness. I'd been there so long that they couldn't even get an accurate read off of the EEGs and stuff. And heavy duty drugs, nothing helped at all. No one could help me. I can't tell you how many times I heard the exact same thing. I'm sorry, Mr. Kraft. I don't know what else I can do to help you. But the first thing that happened, and it's more of a spiritual encounter that happened first. I was sitting in church during probably the lowest point in my life at this point. I was sitting in church one morning after I'd spoken harshly to my wife out of fatigue and sent her crying or something. And and I was contemplating the murder of my dog because she wasn't doing what I didn't want her to do, you know.
Man.
I didn't do what I wanted to do because she was annoying me. And I was just sitting in the pew distracted by my predicament. And I was just kind of, you know, I was like, man, I get this awful, I'm angry, I'm irritable, I'm hateful, I want to hit something, break something, you know, kill the dog or whatever. And I swear, it was as if Jesus himself, and this is during the sermon, it was as if Jesus himself came and casually slid into the pew in front of me. And I remember saying, moaning to him, really, maybe even out loud because I was hallucinating after all. I said, you know, Lord, all I need is a good night's sleep.
Yes.
And he kind of turned to me and he said in response, you don't need a good night's sleep. And I laughed. Oh, you know, it's like, are you serious? And he said, no, what we need is to get that gunk out from inside you in the first place.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it was like an epiphany. His words, all of a sudden, the tumblers fell into the place. All at once, a foundational teaching of Scripture came crashing through my skull. And it was this, that God doesn't merely expect self-control of a believer. He expects our very thoughts and our very desire, our very nature to be like him. In other words, he isn't just content with our resisting, say, temptation or whatever. We have a new nature, one that shouldn't even be tempted by evil because it's evil, you know? And this is one example, but one can divine the life-permeating truth that this represents, highlighted by Philippians 2:5. You know, let this mind be in you, which is in Christ Jesus. And this new understanding of an old truth revolutionized my life so that I was not just struggling to survive this life, but that the life and the Spirit of Jesus became alive and active in me. My energy was renewed supernaturally, even though my insomnia wasn't cured. I was able to move about with more life. God began to use me in the lives of others, you know, sometimes total strangers in ways that were frankly out of this world. I was a longtime singer and songwriter, and I wrote songs of worship during this time that seemed to be imbued with a power unlike anything I'd ever written before or have since. I still need to produce a CD of these songs, actually. But I introduced them as a worship leader in our church to an incredible response, and my life had changed in purpose and substance from the inside out. I was determined that this if insomnia took its toll on me, I would endeavor to either be the most God-righteous crazy man in the psychiatric ward or the most God-righteous man in the cemetery. I made that vow. I said, God, you use this any way you want to, as long as it's for your glory. And it was almost like just new life was breathed in me, even though my insomnia was still wasn't cured.
Yes. But, you know, sometimes we have these symptoms and all these things going on in our lives, but you know what? God's always looking at something that we can't see on the inside of us. He's always looking at our emotions. He's looking at our character. He's looking at so much more than we see. And the insomnia was a horrible thing, but it was only a symptom of something else. And God was working on what was inside of you first. And then it was after this experience that your wife, I understand, began doing some research about insomnia and possible remedies. I kind of think God chose that as the time to do this, to prompt her to do this. What did she come up with?
Yeah, I think you're right. She was looking through some books at a local library. She wanted. We had agreed that the methods that we'd encountered with medical professionals up to this point had been futile, because one of the reasons we thought was that they were only trying to tackle the symptom of insomnia without tackling, you know, the cause. But and we wanted a whole body remedy, a whole body healing to come. They had to come by looking at the whole body. So she was at the library looking through some books at some on natural remedies, which in turn brought her to the resource page in the back of a particular book, which listed, among other entities, something called the Wellness Center in Springfield, Missouri. She ended up calling the director, Douglas Hayes, who was a chiropractor, actually, who dabbled in natural remedies. And after hearing about my case, he sent a specimen pack, which I sent back to him with a specimen, and after which he invited us down to discuss the findings. Well, I thought, why not? You know, I mean, we tried everything else had gone bust, you know. Why not try this, too? Well, you know, the worst that will happen is that we'll waste time and we'll kick in a nice trip somewhere. And
yeah.
I had no expectation whatsoever that this would end any differently. So we took the 3-hour trip to Springfield.
Mm-hmm. So what happened to you there, and how did it change your life?
Well, I met Dr. Hayes, and he seemed like a real nice guy. He basically had me lay down on an examination table where he proceeded to an exam that I suspected was a little more than quackery. All the time, I kept wondering how much this would cost. How much would this cost? This probably won't lead to anything. How much is this going to cost me?
Yeah.
But he finished with his initial exam doing some weird things, and he said, quite frankly, well, your problem is basically digestive, going on to detail how my stomach wasn't digesting my food properly. This, I guess, he got from my sample. I, of course, thought quackery, you know.
That sounded too simple, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. I thought, you know, so tell me that I have a brain tumor or something. I'd have believed that before I believed
it. I don't want it just to be that. I understand.
You know,
that was too simple.
After all the trouble and everything that I endured, you're going to tell me a digestive problem? But anyway, but I remembered when he said that I had been experiencing digestive problems when I was a child.
Uh-huh.
Which a doctor briefly explored but didn't follow up on, I chalked it up to just anxiety, you know, due to insomnia, you know, you just, you know, you're under a lot of stress, your stomach bothers you, so I figured maybe that was what it was. Well, anyway, Doug reviewed the lab results and then sent me home with some herbal remedies to aid my digestion, and off we went back to Kansas City, Missouri. Well, within a month, my insomnia, at least as it was gone.
You're
so
kidding.
Doug Hayes and the Wellness Center saved my life, you know. And in fact, my entire outlook on life, physically, mentally, spiritually, was revolutionized. As I saw the world with clear eyes, everything seemed brighter. Everything seemed better, you know. And right after that, my youngest son was born. And after him, my youngest daughter was, our last child was born a year after that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, God gave me allowed me to experience what I'd missed the previous years. You know, it's like a second chance on life. So that's how the cure came. It's very simply, very quickly. It almost seems unbelievable that it could have been that simple, but thank God it was, and it wasn't something more serious.
So, you know, that's pretty incredible. I know many people would give anything to be able to sleep. I have friends who suffer with insomnia, and this information may help someone else as well. So would you suggest, are there many people who are doing what Doug Hayes is doing, and how can people go to places like this? What would they look for to be able to find someone like that?
You want to look for somebody that deals with whole body healing, definitely naturalistic and holistic healing. Healing methods. The one thing that I would suggest that they don't do is don't start taking a lot of conventional medications, because for one thing, they can have an adverse reaction on the human body, and some of them you can become addicted to it, and still others after a while they'll just lose their effectiveness. So always try to go for somebody that deals with not just a symptom, but with everything. They'll look at your whole body. They'll look at your digestion through samples. They'll look at your blood work, you know, and to see if anything's wrong there. Look for somebody that's going to do extensive testing, because you never know. A lot of things can cause insomnia and that we don't even think about. You know, I would never think that digestion would cause a problem like insomnia. You know, I didn't put the two together, but things like that can. Oh, I have to tell you that something that Doug told me before I left. He had when he determined that I wasn't digesting my food properly, he had said, "You're not getting anything out of your food," and I'm thinking, And I'm thinking, well, then I should be malnutrition or something. I was like, how is it that I'm not suffering from malnutrition? And he looked at me with his eyes wide and said, I don't know. And I thought immediately to the passage of when David and his brothers were in the pagan society, and
yeah.
You know, they were pressured to worship false gods, where
right.
God preserved them physically, you know, that they were healthier
yes.
than everybody else, you know,
yes.
than
yes,
everybody
and
else
it,
that worships those gods.
He definitely
you know?
Had his hand on you, Kevin. He really did.
So.
I don't know
I
how you even
so.
Endured all you did as a child. I just don't know, except for the
incredible.
Grace of God. That's the only
yeah,
way I can. And then without your body digesting food and getting the nutrients that it needed on top of all that exhaustion, God truly had his hand on you.
Yeah.
And even though you've spent most of your life struggling with insomnia, still you've excelled in your writing. I want to hear about your writing, Kevin. I understand you've even won an award or two. Tell us about your writing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Writing always excelled with me. I never lost that, even in the worst times. I could always write. It's incredible. But anyway, I showed exceptional creative writing from an early age, like I said, and this never waned. Somehow, writing never left me. Between 1991 and 1999, I wrote a slew of short stories,
mm-hmm.
Four novels, a good number of commentaries for like in newsletters that my employee published and everything, and two screenplays.
Wow.
being a staunch do-it-yourselfer, I finally decided to start self-publishing my novels. As a matter of fact, I think I came up with that whole idea of self-publishing, but I just didn't have the money to implement it, and somebody else did later on, and so, okay, well, I missed that. But
yeah.
my first novel released was one called S, A Contemporary Religious Fantasy, and it was, it's basically a novel about a man, about a preacher, an unconventional preacher who encounters the devil, who asks him to mediate between himself and God. The devil wants to repent, basically, and he finds this unique preacher who actually preaches things like, you know, Christians should live sinless lives and that kind of stuff. And
mm-hmm.
and the devil sees him and he's tired of the battle with God, and he wants to end it all. So and that book actually remains my most profound work as far as the impact on people's lives, and I highly recommend that to anybody who wants to read my work. But I followed that by two adventure novels, which I had actually written when my daughter was three. The Harry Potter craze came out, and I hated the whole thing about, you know, witchcraft being, you know, glorified and
right.
then embraced
right.
and everything. So I thought I'm gonna write stories that my daughter can enjoy that doesn't involve that stuff. So I wrote the W3 Crew, and then after that, the second book, the W3 Crew Underground, about three upstate New York kids. Bring my hometown back into it. Hopefully, upstate New York kids who encounter a strange phenomenon in their hometown. The first mm-hmm. they encounter a lake monster. The second they encounter an underground community that they have to save from this business tycoon that wants to exploit them. So I wrote those for my daughter. But I got a response from a lot of people from all ages, and that's what I like about the response to my writing. It usually, you know, all ages can appreciate it. So those three are published. I also recently adapted one of my screenplays called Momo.
I want to hear about that. Tell me about Momo.
I really felt the Lord leading me to get into motion pictures. You know, we didn't like what was coming out of Hollywood, not a lot anyway. I mean, and I really felt the Lord was saying, you know, write scripts, make movies. So I learned to write screenplays, and we formed the company, TEK Productions, which has been off and on, depending on how what project we're trying to get off the ground. But
yeah.
I decided ultimately that, you know, our first project should be a low budget feature. And I remember as a little kid growing up in New York, I thought nothing ever happens here, so I would invent things. And I thought one of the things I thought was about a Bigfoot like monster terrorizing the town. And
uh-huh.
so now that I'm an adult, I thought I'll write the story. But I'm in Missouri, so
uh-huh.
I was starting to research Bigfoot and Sasquatch and hairy hominids, and I discovered something called Momo, which is short for Missouri Monster. It is a phenomenon that occurred back in the 70s, a Sasquatch-like creature that terrorized the town of Louisiana, Missouri for 2 weeks in 1972. And I thought, oh, that's perfect, because I'm right here in Kansas City, Missouri, and Momo is Missouri Monster. So I wrote this screenplay about a father and a son on a camping trip to the family cabin in the woods, and they're forced to fight for survival a single night against this terrifying monster, Momo. And it's a creature feature, which I love anyway, but it has a very strong statement of faith in it that really resonated with people. The screenplay, written several years ago, won a couple of awards. It won the ZFest Low No Budget Screenplay Competition, and it also received an accolade from an organization called the Coalition for Children's Entertainment or something like that, and they have something called Kids First. It's like it's a brand, and it got a recommendation, you know, for that, and that was actually even better than the award, because they're very, 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 very strict on what they allow. And so I when I wanted Momo to be something that it's a monster movie, but I didn't want it to be gory. I didn't want there to be a lot of deaths. I didn't want there to be something horrifying that my kids couldn't see. And so, getting their endorsement really said that I did it. I did exactly what I wanted to, and I gave the script to different people to read, and the response was always overwhelming. It was like my knuckles were white reading it and everything. It's a great thriller, you know.
Kids love to read stuff like that, but we don't want them to be frightened out of their wits or drawn into witchcraft. So the fact that you write stories like that have the element of faith in God and those things in them is a wonderful thing, because kids do need to be entertained. And I'm going to look up that stuff, too. I'm going to see if I can't get some of your books.
Yeah,
didn't you win
do.
An award, too? What was the book? Something about a Samaritan I read on your bio.
The last Samaritan. Yeah, it was actually a short story. There was an organization out here called the Kansas City Network for Christian Writers, and at an annual convention, I entered something called the last Samaritan, and it won the fiction award for that year. And then that was great, you know, because the competition was really stiff. And I'll have to release that somehow again. It's an older story, and it's so old that it's actually typewritten. You know, so I had a typewriter when I wrote it. It's a great story, you know.
I'm sure they all are. You sound just like such an energetic and enthusiastic person, and I'm so thankful. Oh my goodness, I'm so thankful that God has brought you through all you've been through, because truly I can't imagine what it must have been like for you to be awake all these days, weeks, months, and years of your life and to survive. And then so thankful also that you have found something to help you, a cure more or less. And I think that will inspire a lot of people who are listening tonight who have trouble sleeping, maybe to look into those kinds of remedies and to consult those kinds of doctors. I know our listeners tonight, Kevin, will want to find out more about you and your books and your films. Where can they do that? Do you have a website or a page or anything?
They can find me on Facebook by name, Kevin M. Kraft. I got a couple of sites, one for my music and one for my commentaries and political and spiritual and religious rants. You know, I like to observe society and comment on it, so I've become quite a commentator on Facebook. I have an official website at kevinmkraft@weebly, weebly.com. That's my official website, although we're going to be moving that to another site eventually. It's going to have more bells and whistles to it. But they can find out everything about me there. Also, if they want to go to my publisher, lulu.com, they can find my work. And I'm also on things like LinkedIn and About Me and Twitter and everything. All I have to do is just look up my name, and I'm pretty easy to find. If you Google Kevin M. Kraft, I'm easy to find. So.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that, and I hope our guests will too. I've been so inspired tonight by Kevin's story. It's an unusual story, but a good story with a good ending, and so thankful he has the Lord Jesus in his life, who truly makes all things good, no matter what. He turns everything into a testimony or a way of helping others or a gift or a talent. God's just so good to do that. And Kevin's story has been so inspiring, which is a portrayal of a child's and then a man's endurance and perseverance through what I would call an extremely hard trial. I can't imagine going without rest and sleep. It's something many of us take for granted, but Kevin and his faith in God prevailed, and he came out on the other side of it victoriously. Kevin didn't waste all those sleepless hours. He used them to write. And sometimes when life is hard, we have to do whatever we can with whatever we have to make life tolerable. Life is often like a waiting room, and we can make it a miserable place, or we can find something to do while we're waiting and waiting for relief and waiting for God's answer. Kevin not only made it tolerable as best as he could, he made it productive, which is pretty amazing to me. I'm so thankful, Kevin, that you finally found some sleep and rest, and or that it found you, and that you're getting some much-deserved rest. I know someone tonight needed to hear your inspiring story, as well as the remedy you found to help alleviate insomnia for you. God bless you, Kevin, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Sissy. This is the first time I've actually told my story in its entirety, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I loved hearing it, and it has inspired me greatly. And we've come to the end of another wonderful program. Be sure and listen again next Thursday when I'll talk with another inspiring guest who reflects God's gifts. Till then, may God bless you and keep you in his care. Good night, Kevin, and good night, listeners.
The Woods End Series by Alexander Clare. When Andrea is framed for murder, she discovers that divorce cannot sever the ties from a dangerous cult. Follow Boston Police Detective Jared Scheel as he sets out to solve a murder and kidnapping, only to confront a vast conspiracy competing to produce the last Antichrist of world history. Against the backdrop of drama and intrigue, the Woods End characters come to see that demons are on their last assignments. Bible prophecy unfolds in real time, and Jesus Christ is at the door. Two books, Woods End, and the thrilling sequel, The Year Between the Woods. Download from Kindle, Nook, Screwpulp.com, or purchase the softcover at Amazon. Also by Alexander Clare, a work of nonfiction, discerning spirits, visionary gifts, and practice. Find it all at alexanderclare.com.
LifeQuest Christian Network.